I'm Christopher Ludden. This is The Connection. Prozac backlash is what our guest, Dr. Joseph Glenn Mullen, is calling the brain's reaction to overuse of the antidepressant drugs like Prozac and Zoloft. Through his own work with hundreds of patients and through the research of others, Joseph Glenn Mullen has cataloged a host of serious side effects to the so-called serotonin-boosting drugs, side effects including long-term brain damage and suicidal urges, withdrawal symptoms, sexual dysfunction, facial tics, memory loss, weight gain are among the reactions that Joseph Glenn Mullen says that doctors, drug companies, and federal regulators are not telling patients and consumers about. It's all part of the pharmacy nation that America has become in the last decade. Everybody, it seems, is on something, including an awful lot of children. The use of Ritalin and antidepressants for preschool children doubled between 1991 and 1995, according to a new study. Joseph Glenn Mullen wants you to consider the alternatives before you fill your next Prozac prescription. Could talk therapy and exercise or herbal remedies and 12-step programs fix your head and, as he suggests, maybe save your life? We're revisiting the Prozac debate this hour. Connection listeners, have you experienced side effects from serotonin boosters? Are you convinced they're safe? 1-800-423-8255 makes the Prozac backlash connection. Dr. Joseph Glenn Mullen teaches psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School, and he practices it in Harvard Square. Good morning and welcome. There's a lot of ground to cover here. Most especially, I want to hear exactly the kinds of alternative prescriptions that you give real patients who think they've got real problems with their heads. But I also want you to sort of tell us what you take to be the latest serious research on bad side effects of these medicines.
Well, you did an excellent job of summarizing the most important of them, and I think top of the list, just as you put it, are these disfiguring tic disorders, which are one of four neurological side effects that are a grave concern, and suicidality on the drugs, which is an issue that surfaced in the media about 10 years ago and is now coming to the fore again with new research and the book.
Millions of people are on these drugs. How many people suffer the side effects?
Well, we have 28 million people who've taken these drugs. That's about 10% of the American population. And as you say, a growing number of them are children. We don't have good numbers on how many of them are suffering side effects. This is a major part of the problem. The FDA doesn't have adequate funding. Only 4% of their budget goes to monitoring.
But are you talking about a tenth of 1%? Are you talking about a quarter or what?
Well, according to David Katzel, a recent commissioner of the FDA, about 1% of serious long-term side effects of medications come to the attention of the FDA. That's why it takes so long for people to learn about these kinds of side effects with Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, the other drugs in this class that target serotonin in the brain.
You write about something I was unaware of, that there have been out-of-court settlements, and rather hush-hush settlements at that, in big numbers by the drug companies with people who complained of side effects. What's the story?
Well, the particular issue here is the suicidality. One of the cases, the original case that was the test case for this that went to trial in Kentucky, the Westbecker case, appeared to be a jury verdict in favor of Eli Lilly. However, afterwards, there were rumors of a huge settlement that was made during the trial. The judge tried to reopen it. Lilly fought him for several years. He succeeded in having an attorney general's investigation, and Lilly had to acknowledge that they made a huge settlement. The final judgment was changed to dismissed as settled, and we know there have been others as well.
What does that tell you?
Well, that tells me that great efforts have been gone to obscure these side effects.
But does a settlement imply a kind of guilty knowledge on the part of the drug company?
I think a settlement implies that they didn't want to have this information go public. They didn't want to have the trial proceed. What happened was the plaintiff's side had just gotten permission to introduce damaging evidence that probably would have turned the jury in the opposite direction. And the experts, the legal experts who've written about this, say that Eli Lilly did not want to lose the case. And this settlement, this secret settlement that was made, the judge says that Lilly denied it to him. This is considered unprecedented in a Western court and one of the many shocking revelations in the book's chapter on this subject.
You catalog a whole variety of side effects. It would be hard to say that you prove that these are the results of the antidepressant drugs. But, I mean, I want to go through a few of them. I mean, people complain of weight gain. There are lots of reasons for weight gain. They complain of memory problems. Lots of reasons for that, too. Some people get hyper. Some people have these Parkinsonian symptoms of a kind of facial rigidity or body rigidity. Other people complain that they get addicted and they have a kind of electroshock effect when they try to pull back. Other people report that, Prozac poops out, as they say, and they have to crank up the dosage to get the effect. Other people find that, after a year, they're back in, with the same emotional headaches and no way to treat it. How do you know that all these things are attributable to the pill and therefore to the companies?
Well, I cite, as you know, there's about 600 footnotes at the back of the book citing the medical literature, so that I'm really relaying to the public extensive medical reports and, in many instances, excellent research documenting these side effects in addition to the cases that I present. So let's look at Maura, who had been put on Prozac by her primary care doctor because she was having a difficult stretch in her life. She ends up on the drug for 2 years, and at the end, she has these disfiguring facial tics. Her tongue is sticking out uncontrollably. This is very frightening for her. She starts wearing scarves so that it won't frighten her children. She went off the Prozac, and it took 6 months for the worst of these grotesque tics to clear, but she is still left with twitching around her mouth. Now, this is one of four neurological side effects that doctors, psychiatrists are very familiar with from an earlier class of drugs, mm-hmm. major tranquilizers. They're very serious. We have people writing in the medical literature saying patients should be told about these, and the worried, well, this is the major concern. People with mild conditions who have been overprescribed these drugs, especially in managed care settings, and don't know about the risks that are emerging, such as these serious neurological side effects. Another one is the symptoms of Parkinson's disease, rigidity, tremor. I hear from many patients that they feel very fatigued and slowed down by the drug. Eli Lilly lists in their own official product information 10% of patients have tremors. That's a neurological side effect. Mm. So I'm not just, there's my cases, there's the medical literature, there's excellent research, there's Eli Lilly's own official product information. Most of these side effects are listed there.
Parenthetically, what does the managed care setting have to do with it?
Well, these drugs just took off in the early 90s. And as I say in the book, it's a combination of incredibly aggressive pharmaceutical company marketing, and literally simultaneously in time, managed care was putting a lot more pressure on doctors not to refer patients to specialists. Psychiatrists, social workers, psychologists, they're specialists. So we've had a huge increase in the amount of prescribing antidepressants by primary care doctors. They write 70% of the prescriptions for these drugs now. We have an excellent RAND study showing that they just spend, less than 20 minutes making a diagnosis. They give big scripts for 3 months, 6 months, even a year. When you run out, you call. You often get a telephone message that another year's supply has been, called into the pharmacy. This is a big part of what I'm calling attention to. With such serious side effects emerging with the drugs, it's the huge majority of patients who are on them for mild, even trivial conditions who need to know about these risks.
Hmm. There are a couple of an important general point here that you make. Again, I think it's kind of unprovable, but it's terribly provocative, that the fashion in these drugs has a very predictable cycle. We've been through it a number of times now, from the sort of the hyper Newsweek cover sell a cure for your brain, a sort of 10-year cycle that includes celebrity endorsement, massive use, overprescription, bad side effects, disenchantment, entering a second 10-year cycle of mm-hmm. sort of more disenchantment, and a third 10-year cycle toward a kind of something like abolition. What is the pattern here? Are you sure that Prozac fits it?
Well, this is what I call the 10, 20, 30-year pattern, and you summarized it excellently, and Prozac is right on course. Again, it's not just Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, the other antidepressants targeting serotonin. We're a little over 10 years. We're starting to see what may well turn out to be the most serious side effects of the drugs. If you look at major tranquilizers, which is the best analogy, same timing, it's at about the 20-year mark that there's really a huge clamor, and it wasn't until 30 years after major tranquilizers that had been introduced that the FDA had manufacturers put warnings on their labels about the very side effects I'm talking about with the Prozac group. So that's a 10, 20, 30-year pattern, a little over 10 years. I'm trying to let consumers, let patients know now rather than another 10 years from now what's emerging with these drugs.
What would you do about it? I mean, are you sort of waiting eagerly for the day in 20 years when this stuff is gone? Or do you think there's a way to administer potentially dangerous drugs much more closely without the overprescription, without the universal application after, as you say, these 20-minute diagnoses by primary care doctors? Is there a way to use these things safely?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I advocate in the book is that I'm very well aware from my own patients of how many people have benefited from these antidepressants, and I do still prescribe them. I provide a model in the book for assessing whether or not you really need them, whether your symptoms are mild, moderate, or severe, and whether or not they're affecting your level of function. And there are definitely people with severe, moderate to severe symptoms and impaired level of functioning who benefit from the drugs. They should still know about the risk.
Describe how you'd do it with a patient. I once asked Peter Kramer, the author of Listening to Prozac, would he prescribe it for me? And we, you know, yammered back and forth, sort of normally neurotic, middle-aged, white American man, would love to feel better than well, as would we all. And after a kind of focused, but, you know, rather unspecific conversation, he said, yeah, I'd give it to you. And I was a little shocked because I didn't take it. What would you want to know from me before you prescribe Prozac for Christopher Lydon?
Well, that is precisely the problem that I'm getting at, is the people who are on it to feel better than well for mild conditions and don't know about these risks. So if you came into the office just like anyone else, I'd want to go through the full battery of your symptoms, full history of your life, and the key things.
I have ups and downs, doctor.
Yeah, no, the key things here are two. Are your symptoms mild, moderate, or severe? That's the first. Second, is it impairing your level of function? So to give you two examples, let's say your symptoms are mild and your level of functioning has not been impaired. Then I advise you try milder, safer, more effective treatments, okay? I'm going to want you to consider psychotherapy. If you're feeling down because of your relationship, I'm going to want you to consider couples therapy. If it turns out that you've got some kind of a phobia that you were considering the drug for, I'm going to want you to try behavioral treatment. If you've got a substance abuse problem, I'm going to want you to try a 12-step program. I'm going to recommend aerobic exercise because it's a great natural antidepressant. You're only mildly depressed, so you've probably got the energy to institute an aerobic exercise program. Now we'll look at the other end of the spectrum. Let's say you've got severe symptoms. You can't get out of bed. You're crying all the time. You can't focus on your work. And you're really in jeopardy. You might lose your job, your ability to provide for your family. Then I'm going to say to you, you know, it's really a reasonable alternative, reasonable option to consider these medications to jumpstart you out of this situation. I'm going to fully inform you of all these side effects, but then you are going to make a risk-benefit analysis and decide whether or not the drug is really indicated.
The doctor is in. The phone is 1-800-423-8255. Dr. Joseph Glenn Mullen has written a book called Prozac Backlash about the dangers in the serotonin-boosting drugs, but also about the alternatives, homeopathic, acupunctural, talk therapy, exercise, all sorts of other ways that he still thinks may be much more effective. 1-800-423-TALK makes the Prozac connection. Michelle is on the line.
Yes?
Hello, Michelle. Welcome.
Hello. I was clinically depressed for a portion of my college years, and although I never took Prozac, I was encouraged by my family to seek therapy, and nearly every therapist that I saw had a very easy solution, which was to just prescribe Prozac, and I'm very nervous about taking medications and things like that. I mean, I don't take aspirin for a headache. So after really rigorous searching, we finally found someone who was willing to pursue other avenues, and she suggested I was going to see her two or three times a week, and she suggested exercise and other things, and it really did seem to help. It did make a difference, and I really would like to I guess applaud the doctor for suggesting those kinds of things.
Michelle, what kind of therapy worked effectively? I mean, really gets you through the day and the night.
I actually, she had me writing, I had, you know, a history of abusive family members and things like that. She had me writing letters that, you know, to get feelings out, whether or not you choose to send them is up to you. She had me confronting these people that had hurt my feelings and had, you know, had hurt me over the years. You know, disappointing fathers, I had an abusive stepmother. She had me confronting those people and suggesting that, look, you need to hold those people responsible for what you're doing instead of what I had done was just, you know, do everything that everybody expected to me, and I was the good girl because I didn't want to get into any more trouble. You know, so I was, you know, repressing these things and putting them down and suggesting that, you know, no, I had not been abused, but my siblings had been. She brought all those things to the surface and then suggested that I do those kinds of things. It really did help. It helped to talk to her. It helped to talk to those people and tell them exactly what I expected of them at the time and how they were irresponsible for not getting me out of the situation that I was in. I mean, you know, a 10-year-old child cannot leave their home. When they are being abused, they, you know, their other adults in their lives are supposed to step forward and help them. And she suggested these other things, and she suggested that I seriously exercise and not just, you know, sort of fooling around with it, but make it a daily part of my regimen. And it really did help. It was amazing how much better I felt.
What kind of exercise?
Well, she said whatever made me feel good. I chose running.
Okay.
And I got up. It was amazing. I mean, I was the kind of person that never did this kind of thing. I was getting out of bed at 5 in the morning to run before class.
This is great.
This was amazing. And it made such a difference. And, I mean, there were days when, you know, you're in school, so you're studying till late at night, and I'm still getting up at 5 in the morning because I look forward to that run. And it really has become a part of my lifestyle, and I really appreciate that. And
Michelle, you found a good doctor, and you tell an important story.
And her case could be right out of Prozac Backlash. This is exactly what I'm talking about. You're absolutely right that a lot of the doctors and therapists you go to today, they just say Prozac, Prozac, Prozac. And if you had gotten the drug and not gotten therapy, all these issues that you're talking about in your past, they would just still be there. You'd be dependent on the drug. If it wore off, you'd crash again. Mm-hmm. And I think what's great about your story is just what I see in my practice. I'll tell a little story. A few weeks ago, I started two people on Prozac, and one of them had pretty bad neurological side effects, stiffness in their jaw, really, really uncomfortable, and then following that became just severely fatigued. And I had warned the patient about these, and they just said, you know, forget it, the spring is getting here, I think you're right, I'm going to go back to exercising. They're exercising every day, they feel fabulous, and they're so pleased that they didn't go on Prozac. I have another patient who didn't feel they could exercise, they're on Prozac, they feel very sluggish, they're kind of mixed feelings about the drug. I'm so glad you called, Michelle. Your case is exactly who the book is for. We have a Prozac Backlash. I wonder if you were told about the side effects when you were offered the drug, because so many patients aren't.
Michelle's gone, but let me ask. You speak of aerobic exercise. What about running, strength training? What do you prescribe specifically?
Well, by aerobic, we would mean things like running, swimming, you know, either running outdoors, going to the gym and using a bicycle, you know, at the gym, or treadmill or Stairmaster, bicycle outside. Aerobic exercise is emphasizing breathing and, you know, your circulation. It's not pumping iron. It's aerobic exercise in particular that's very effective for mild depression. It takes a little longer than the drugs to kick in. It takes longer than an antidepressant, maybe say 4 to 6 weeks instead of 2 to 4 weeks. But my gosh, if it can work for you, it's obviously the most natural antidepressant you could use.
And endorphins.
Right. Endorphins, serotonin, adrenaline, we don't know, but probably it's doing things like that and having a terrific effect, and you don't have to worry about side effects.
1-800-423-8255, the Prozac Backlash Connection with Dr. Joseph Glenn Mullen. Evelyn is on the line.
Yes, hi. I have a completely opposite story, and what makes me angry is that people who read this book are going to feel that they are going to be afraid to go into any treatment. I've been on Prozac since 1986 when it was investigational. And if it weren't for Prozac and the right support group and my therapist, I would not be here talking to you right now. I represent a support group of 200 to 300 people who have taken herbs, some of them, and they've taken them and they've committed suicide. People have gone for acupuncture, and it doesn't work. I have a niece who has mild depression and is on Prozac. And people who are very depressed can't run. It saved my life. I don't know if anyone who has any tics. You say one of the side effects of taking Prozac is memory loss. Well, one of the side effects of depression is memory loss. You know, without Prozac and other support, I mean, I have a quality, with it, I have a quality life. Without it, I wouldn't. And it just, it infuriates me that people are going to read this book and say, I'm afraid to take medication. And, you know, I don't know, it just seems that you have something against these drug companies.
Evelyn, it's a perfectly fair complaint, and a lot of people have said this sort of thing before. Joseph Glenn Mullen, how would you have treated Evelyn?
Well, I don't think Evelyn can have read my book if she thinks that people would read it and not want to take Prozac if it was appropriate. You know, as I say in the book and as I've been saying here on the show, I have a very moderate, balanced perspective here. I'm saying that the drug is helpful to people with serious enough side effects, but they need to know about the risks. They need to be offered alternatives as well so that they can eventually wean themselves off the drugs if at all possible. And one of the things that I find very interesting is let's compare and contrast Michelle's response and Evelyn's response. Michelle says that she went to numerous therapists, was reflexively offered Prozac, that she did a lot of psychological work and is much better for it along with the exercise. And she was very reasonable and balanced and moderate. Evelyn, I'm very taken with your anger, the anger that people have when you dare to question these antidepressants. I'm sure you're aware that there are support groups as well for people who've had horrendous side effects on these antidepressants. So I think what we really need here is a thoughtful, balanced, calm discussion, because so many people are taking these drugs for mild conditions, antidepressants for hair pulling, nail biting, mild depression to feel better than well, as we just discussed, and they don't know about the risks, and they need to.
1-800-423-8255. Could I just ask you, parenthetically, do you know why this playing with serotonin levels should damage the brain? I mean, do we know enough about the brain and the way that the chemicals work to see what the damage is?
Well, one of the things that I say in Prozac Backlash is that we really don't know how these drugs affect the living human brain. When patients are told you have a serotonin imbalance and the drug will increase your serotonin, that's hypothetical based on test tube studies of blenderized rat brains, and it's not made clear enough to patients how hypothetical that is. However, in answer to your question, we do have some excellent research. It's animal research. In some cases, we have some patient research during blood levels and whatnot. But this is the issue. These side effects, these neurological side effects, are associated with drugs that increase dopamine. That's another chemical in the brain. So as they've emerged, doctors have said, well, why would drugs, which we think increase serotonin, be associated with side effects of drugs that decrease dopamine, okay? We have now very good research showing that there are connections in the brain between the serotonin and dopamine system, such that if you increase serotonin, you get a reflexive, what I call Prozac backlash type response in the brain, decreasing dopamine. And we think, but again, we don't fully know, that this is why we're seeing these side effects, this particular group of side effects with these drugs. It's also tied to the suicidality.
1-800-423-8255, the Prozac Backlash connection. Michael is calling from Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Hi, Chris. Good show.
Welcome, Michael. Thank you.
Let me start by saying that I support the informed use of SSRIs, and clearly in my own clinical practice, they've been a godsend for many people. Now, having said that, I've been a mental health care provider in private practice for many years, and even 5 years ago, I began hearing lots of complaints of side effects from folks taking SSRIs, especially in the area of sexual complaints, sexual side effects, so much so that I just did my own literature research and found very well-established studies, even 5 years ago, documenting the kind of sexual side effects problems with SSRIs that had been established even 5 years ago. And my question to your guest is, where is the FDA with this, with what seems to be very well-established research that is not new, and the ubiquitousness of these drugs right now? I'm just wondering, where is the FDA, and why don't we hear anything from anyone in an official capacity about this?
Excellent
Michael,
question.
Thank you.
Excellent question. The official number in Eli Lilly's product information for Prozac is that 2 to 5% of depressed patients on Prozac have sexual side effects.
Meaning low libido.
Oh, low libido, difficulty reaching orgasm, inability to ejaculate, a whole host of kind of mechanical as well as libidinal problems. We have very good studies showing that a much higher percentage of patients have these side effects, and I go into that in my chapter. And just last week, Eli Lilly, in responding to the book, acknowledged that sexual side effects occur as much as 10 times more frequently than their official information. And our caller is absolutely right. This information's been out there a long time. Why isn't it in the official information? Why hasn't that been changed?
You mean to say they've changed the number from 2 to 5%? Maybe 20 to 50%?
Well, it's still, they're saying 20 to 30%. Mm-hmm. And if you, the lowest it could be is 3 based on their numbers. So that's a tenfold spread.
We're talking about the Prozac backlash with Dr. Joseph Glenn Mullen. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
Boston's NPR News Station.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection, the backlash against Prozac connection, with Dr. Joseph Glenn Mullen, who teaches psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School and practices it in Cambridge. The phone is 1-800-423-8255. It's not a new argument about Prozac, and yet what's new in his book is the evidence of serious side effects in much greater numbers than the drug companies have allowed in the past. Could I just ask, it seems to me the general public question here is, why does an extremely powerful and for some people very, very useful medicine automatically run this risk of huge overprescription? Why does sort of nuclear weapons have to be introduced into every backyard in America?
Well, that's an excellent question. It has happened repeatedly in the history of these extremely popular sort of feel-good pills. You know, the drug is being used for far more than just depression now, for anxiety, for obsessions, compulsions, PMS, gambling, all kinds of side effects, all kinds of conditions. I think in this particular case, it was the convergence of marketing by pharmaceutical companies and managed care. And it's a quick fix. People are turned to quick fixes. And in a managed care setting where cost is such an issue, quick fixes are often what is brought out. And now
could that be prevented? I mean, we don't allow everybody to have a nuclear weapon, although I suppose
right.
It is the ultimate settler of big arguments. Should some a medicine this strong be generally available? Should it be allowed for mild symptoms?
Well, primary care doctors are not happy about being prescribed this. We have an excellent survey showing that they're quite upset about the lack of access to specialists in mental health. And I think a major way to stop it would be that patients would be granted good, thorough evaluations by mental health practitioners, and not a mental health practitioner, a psychiatrist who specializes in only prescribing drugs, medication doctors, but much more broadly based psychiatrists, psychologists, and social workers who could make a full assessment of whether or not alternatives would help the patient.
What kind of evaluation? How long would it take to get that kind of evaluation?
Well,
what about re-evaluations?
Well, re-evaluation is probably the most important point here. anyone, if you know anyone who's on one of these antidepressants, you should urge them to get a reevaluation of whether or not they really need the medication and a close look at the many wonderful, safer, more effective alternatives that are available. The drugs are being vastly overprescribed while their dangers are ignored.
Let's talk about the alternatives. Parenthetically, again, do you acknowledge that some people claim that these drugs are more effective and maybe more wisely used with obsessive-compulsive disorders than they are with just depression?
Well, with all of the conditions that the drugs are used for, the antidepressants are used for, and by the way, many of them are not FDA-approved uses of the antidepressants, with all of them, there's definitely a range of people with mild symptoms who don't need an antidepressant being given them. The definition of obsessive-compulsive disorder has really been broadened and expanded in the last 10 years when the first drug to get approval, FDA approval for OCD, came out in the late 80s. You saw the whole definition of OCD, which used to be a very rare condition that, you know, a psychiatrist, a general psychiatrist, might see a few in a lifetime. The whole definition shifted to include much milder conditions. This is what experts called marketing a disease to market an antidepressant. And this is what we've really got to call people's attention to.
Okay. Let's talk about a patient who feels depressed or anxious or not quite on the top of his or her form comes to you and you say, look, St. John's wort or running four times a week or meditation or all sorts of other things would be a more holistic, safer, and in the long run, more effective way. I can just see that patient, might be me, itching to say, doctor, come on, I want the pill and I want it now. I've heard the lecture. I could have given it myself. How do you take them through the longer course?
First of all, I walk them through all of these side effects so that they're making an informed choice. Second of all, I give them the model of how severe are your symptoms and how's it affecting your level of functioning. And ultimately, if they're symptomatic, it is their decision, and I respect their decision. And people tend to divide. There are people who the first thing they want is an antidepressant, and there are other people who the last thing they want is an antidepressant. And so long as they're making an informed choice, that's what we go with. And then we see if they have any side effects, they see if they want to reevaluate.
But if they're not symptomatic, if they're not twitching or crying or, you know, missing work, would you ever say, no, I won't do it?
Well, I refuse to prescribe the drugs, antidepressants, for someone who is not with symptoms and says they want it to feel better than well. That I will not do. I feel that people have to have symptoms. You know, we have excellent research just come out. It's an incredible coincidence with the book. There was a study done in the British Isles by one of Europe's leading specialists on antidepressants. He's written the definitive academic book published by Harvard University Press. He did a study looking at the effects of Zoloft on well-being in healthy volunteers, not depressed. These were senior doctors and nurses at a hospital. And he has just come out with this study that 10% of these healthy volunteers became suicidal, and they were keeping diaries as part of the study. And the diaries are so striking. They have the neurological side effect, that Prozac backlash side effect, where they get very agitated and they feel like life isn't worth living. There's a diary by one doctor. She's 30 years old. She's got kids. And she says that an alien force has taken over her, and she's compulsively driven to throw herself in front of a car. She leaves the house to go and do it. She happens to be on call, and her beeper goes off, and she says that broke the trance. That saved her life. Otherwise, she'd be dead, and her family wouldn't know why.
1-800-423-8255. The Prozac backlash connection with Dr. Joseph Glenn Mullen. Eve is listening online in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Good day, Eve.
Hi, how are you?
Welcome, good.
Yeah,
Better than well, I should say.
I come from two very difficult situations. I have a husband who committed suicide 2 years ago after being misdiagnosed and on wrong medications for 2 years, unfortunately and tragically. And I'm now dealing with the emotional aftermath of that with an 8.5-year-old who suffers from understandable depression right now and emotional difficulties. And what I'm afraid of is, another viewer talked about this, is the fear that this kind of book and this kind of media coverage and this kind of title is going to result in. I'm educated consumer. I'm an empowered consumer. I waited 6 months being scared to death to put my little one on an SSRI, and because of that six-month delay, ended up with her having a very serious breakdown, having had to take her out of school. And I feel that if I'd gotten the right information and the right pushback from my physician, I might have alleviated what happened to our family, what happened to her so much earlier. It was a horrible situation, and my fear overruled my judgment. So I think that if there's one major problem here, it's not that Prozac or Paxil or Zoloft are good or bad. I think that if there's anything that Dr. Glenn might focus on, it's the need for better discussion and less reticence on the part of physicians to share the right information with patients that will enable them to make the right decisions and make them in a timely fashion. Because people who are scared don't make the right decisions, and they don't make them quickly.
Very hard-earned wisdom, Eve, and I appreciate your call. It is fighting the impulse to the quick fix, I think.
Exactly. We're on the same page, Eve. Patients just need to know all the information about both the benefits and the risks. Now, in the case of children, it's very important to know that antidepressants, these SSRIs, are not approved for children by the FDA for depression. We had a huge study just came out a few weeks ago, which has drawn a lot of attention to this in a medical journal, saying that without FDA approval, prescribing medications this powerful to children with developing brains is really a misfortune. Their overprescription to children is really very serious and something I think that society is getting very upset about. Now, what you need to understand is that what we're seeing with children is the tip of the iceberg, helping us to call attention to what's happening across the board. Antidepressants are being prescribed for conditions for which they're not approved by the FDA. Patients are getting brief cursory evaluations. It's being prescribed as a quick fix. Patients aren't told the side effects. Patients aren't offered alternatives. That's precisely what the complaint is about children. You know, it's being called a national health care crisis. It's across the board,
who's
not just
who's
children.
Who's driving the wider use of these things, including Ritalin for children?
I think that it's, again, a quick fix that makes it, you know, people just grab for it. There's heavy, heavy marketing, there's heavy promotion, and we have managed care insurers who are pushing for quicker fixes rather than more thoughtful, lengthier, and in some cases more expensive interventions.
Eve, how do you discriminate, you know, in the in a pressured situation when you need a serious medication?
I just know, though, that I saw within 4 months of being off, 4 weeks of being on an appropriate medication, a child who was smiling again. I mean, we did talk therapy. We did the appropriate things, but I feel that if I'd had the right information, I might have gone that route earlier. And I also, I mean, right now we're still dealing with it. It's going to be an ongoing struggle. And, you know, like I read, and I'm very worried about the whole impact on impulsivity and suicide. And I think that people need to understand all of the good things that SSRIs potentially do. I know that there are studies going on now looking at the linkage between what SSRI can do in terms of controlling the impulsivity that leads to suicide. I know it's not proven, but, I mean, I'm doing my reading now. I'm doing my homework. And I just, I mean, if there's one message I have, it's just make sure that people understand that it's not black and white, that they need to have the right information, and that I just find a lot of physicians are a little bit, I wish I could think of a better word than stingy, but not as forthcoming with all of the information.
Exactly, exactly. This is the problem, and this is why we're getting such an overwhelming response to Prozac Backlash. The website ProzacBacklash.com is being visited by people just like you saying, I've been trying to get this information for years. We have a lot of people who get withdrawal side effects. We now know that these are most common with the Prozac-type antidepressants that wash out the most quickly. So we see it most with Paxil. Middle of the ground is Zoloft, and least with Prozac. But people get severe withdrawal side effects. They have electric shock-like sensations in their brain, tingling sensations running down their arms, visual phenomena, their vision jumping back and forth, dizziness, they can't walk straight. They feel held hostage to the drug. And when doctors don't know, we have a survey showing only 30% of primary care doctors know about withdrawal. They tell even fewer patients, 17% tell their patients. When the patients and the doctors don't know, do you know what the result is? They're put back on the drug because the withdrawal is mistaken for a return of the original symptoms, and you've got a person now on an antidepressant chasing their tail for withdrawal and exposed for years more potentially.
You make an interesting point in the book that people use the internet to sort of talk over the back fence about the real symptoms, the reality, the dangers, the experience, in a way, and get more in a fashion than they get from their doctors. Where would you go for a kind of a good straight talk conversation among experienced people on the internet?
Where would I go?
Yeah, where would you point people?
Well, at the moment, I point them to ProzacBacklash.com. I have not myself gone on the internet looking at some of these other websites,
but I quoted them
because the patients tell me about them. Numerous patients have told me about websites where they have to resort to going to. I can't name any specific one other than, you know, Prozac.com, which we set up for this purpose, ProzacBacklash.com. But there are others out there, and I would encourage people, don't just visit ProzacBacklash.com. Go to the other ones as well. They're referenced in the book.
1-800-423-8255 makes the Prozac Backlash connection. Rebecca is on the line. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello.
Hello, welcome.
Hi. Yes, I'm an occupational therapist, and I also work with children, so this sort of relates to your last call, but I worked with a child who was put on Prozac between the ages of about 2.5 and 3. He had a lot of autistic type of symptoms, a lot of anxiety issues. I don't work with him anymore, but he has, at this point, it's about 2 years later, and he has some pretty significant tremors. He's been having seizures. I don't know if those things could be related. I don't actually know if he's still taking Prozac or not, but I do keep in touch with his family. And I guess my concern is, you know, you're saying how the FDA hasn't approved the use of some of these medications for children. But, you know, in the case where a child has experienced this when they're young and when their brain's developing, what can be sort of the future for them if they're taken off the drugs?
Well, I think that we, not having seen this particular boy, not knowing this particular case, I think the concerns here are tremors. You know, 10% of patients have tremors on Prozac. That's listed in Prozac's official product information. And the big concern here, I mean, when you're talking a 2 or 3-year-old, their brain is so immature. It's so at a rapidly developing stage. And we don't know the effects of antidepressants on the brain at that age. So, and if they're not approved by the FDA, if there aren't studies showing, documenting scientifically that they worked to the satisfaction of the FDA, then I just don't understand the overprescription of these drugs to children of that kind of age. And I think this is part of the cultural backlash we're seeing now to Prozac-type antidepressants. People are very shocked at the way in which these antidepressants are being prescribed.
Rebecca, thank you. 1-800-423-8255, the Prozac Backlash connection. Barbara is on the line.
Hello.
Hello, Barbara. Welcome.
Hello. I have a comment to make, and it's basically regarding the inappropriate prescription of psychotropic medications in general, not just Prozac. I myself was prescribed Xanax for gastritis and am now in a very long withdrawal. And I have found that my doctor did not inform me that the drug was addictive, and I was told that it was benign and harmless. And when I went back to the doctor to describe the withdrawal symptoms, I was, in fact, told I was anxious and needed more medication. And I, in fact, had to go to the Internet to a support group to get appropriate information regarding withdrawal syndrome. And I think it's just appalling.
Where did you find it, Barbara? Where did you find the...
This particular one is benzoatonelist.com. And it's for benzodiazepine withdrawal in particular. But there are 300 people on this one site suffering immeasurably because their doctors refuse to believe that such a phenomenon exists. The drug companies, I think, don't want to disclose how many people wind up in a lot of distress for overprescription of these medications, inappropriate prescription of these medications. But people have to turn to the Internet, to support groups, because there's no medical
exactly.
support.
You make this is you're absolutely right. We're talking here about Prozac backlash, but it's just part of a much larger picture of psychiatric medications in general being vastly overprescribed. We see this with anxiety. We're now seeing it with manic depressive illness. The definition of that has been watered down and broadened with the introduction of drugs being marketed for it, with obsessive compulsive disorder. The one that's on the horizon that's happening right before us is an obscure, little-known condition called social phobia. Again, it was very rare. Psychiatrists rarely saw it. One of these Prozac-type antidepressants, Paxil, became the first drug to do studies for this particular condition and get FDA approval. Now, in the process of it being marketed for this condition, the condition was renamed social anxiety disorder. Isn't that a little more palatable than social phobia? And by the time it made it to the media, it was Paxil for shyness. And you have people, I have people coming into my office clutching an ad for Paxil for shyness. Well, the ad doesn't say Paxil for shyness, but clutching an ad for Paxil for this condition with a little simplistic checklist of symptoms. And they come in and they're sold. I mean, the work that the doctor has to do to counter the messages that the patient has had is incredible. And your case,
what is the message of the ad?
The message of the ads overall, I won't, you know, I don't have this particular one in front
didn't
of me.
Didn't want to dance at the junior
one,
prom.
The overall impression is, you know, for life's aches and pains, for the ups and downs of life, these drugs are miracle cures, quick fixes. The side effects are, you know, if you read the front of the ad, you wouldn't think that the side effects were all that serious. If you turn it over and look at the fine print, you've got to be a highly specialized medical doctor to see most of the side effects that I'm talking about with Prozac-type antidepressants in the little tiny print at the back. That's wrong. You know, we talked about the sexual side effects earlier, that just last week, in response to Prozac backlash, Lilly has said that their number for sexual side effects is off by as much as tenfold. Well, that's a reflection on all of the numbers in the official information. And because the FDA doesn't have systematic monitoring, that's why we're all in the dark. That's why it can take 30 years. That's why we need to act much more quickly now with these very serious, dangerous side effects of the Prozac-type antidepressants.
Barbara, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. Linda is on the line.
Hi.
Hello, Linda.
Hi. I wanted to come to the guest's defense a little bit further from the earlier caller. I think her name was Evelyn, who was so angry. I noticed that also. She kept saying she was angry. But one thing that your guest didn't mention was she did refer to her therapist as well as her support group. And many people are taking these drugs who have never even been, have never seen a psychiatrist and don't have a therapist. I happen to know one of my close family members who is a psychotherapist, hasn't been to a psychiatrist, but is getting Zoloft from her general physician, and she's really hyper. She always says she doesn't sleep, she can't sleep, but she'll say, oh, I don't sleep. And I've noticed a really significant change in her behavior, and I didn't really associate the two necessarily. It just seems very noticeable. I've also noticed that she talks about ADHD a lot and even suggested that I should consider taking Ritalin because I am a procrastinator and, you know, that sort of thing. And it just seems so frivolous to me sometimes. But
well, 70% of prescriptions for Prozac-type antidepressants, for antidepressants in general now, are written by primary care doctors. And you're absolutely right. People can be getting years of treatment with these powerful medications that are now showing these serious side effects and never have seen a specialist. Mm. I have to emphasize that if they see a psychiatrist who specializes only in prescribing medications, a medication doctor, they're not going to get a really balanced, broad perspective. They need to see a general psychiatrist, a psychologist, a social worker who's broadly trained in all the different treatment options to go over with people.
You know, the other interesting number that we haven't mentioned is the percentage of people who can get the same beneficial effects from placebos.
Yes, 60-80% of the effects of antidepressants in studies is accounted for by placebo. Again, if you know anyone on an antidepressant, urge them to get a reevaluation of whether or not they still need the antidepressant and a good look at all the alternatives available.
I wish you'd write a prescription for placebos to everybody on the Connection staff,
okay,
including me.
I wish we could many times.
Thank you. Dr. Joseph Glenmullen, the book is called Prozac Backlash. We had help today from Michael Garth, Rebecca Smuckler, and Kim Bichari. Our website is theconnectiononeword.org. Our website producer is Jim Norris. The Connection is produced by Catherine Bidwell, Hitesh Hathi, John Holt, Jill Kaufman, Amy McDonald, and Keith Shields. Mary McGrath is our senior producer. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Coming up next on Here and Now at Noon, all that's news and some special reports, including Regards Rodeo. Regards Rodeo tells the